How do we continue faithfully to confess and practice our Lutheran faith in a culture of secularism, pluralism, and relativism? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is the 2017 edition of Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 edition. The headline from Religion News Service reads, "Closing Doors, Small Religious Colleges Struggle for Survival." The story there is of several religious universities and colleges that, well, the struggle is financial. That's the bottom line, literally and figuratively, for so many small colleges, but especially religious ones. We're going to be talking about this story and about the closing of small religious colleges and universities, what they need to do, what they can do to stay open, and are they still necessary? Dr. Dan Gard joins us on this Tuesday afternoon. He's president of Concordia University Chicago. Dr. Gard, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you. It has been a while, and I always enjoy being with you on the air. It's wonderful.
I'm going to be referencing this story by Bobby Ross, Jr., frequent guest on the program here in for Religion News Service, on the closing of small religious colleges and their struggle for survival. Why do you think several Christian colleges and universities are closing?
Well, I think Religious News Service has focused on faith-based institutions, which, of course, is within their area of interest. It's interesting that there was another article that came out, I think it was last Wednesday, CNBC, and it was an interview with a Harvard Business School professor by the name of Clayton Christensen. And in his analysis, within the next decade, half of all colleges are going to close. Now, that's a pretty grim prophecy. I'm not sure it will be realized, but I do think that private education in particular, and Christian education, even more so, is being challenged on a number of different fronts. So I do think there's great danger to a number of colleges closing. We do anticipate that happening. I think each of the Concordias, including the one that I serve, is working very hard to prevent that from happening, and I think we have made great progress to ensure that we will continue the mission that was given to us by the church well into future generations.
One of the presidents of one of those universities featured in the RNS story that is due to close makes this analogy. He says the transition from a mom-and-pop shop to a niche boutique has been difficult for many colleges. In a pre-Walmart world, mom-and-pop shops could survive and thrive. In the Walmart world, you need to have a niche market and very sophisticated business practices, and I think that's been difficult for many small Christian universities. Is that mom-and-pop versus Walmart analogy apt in your thinking?
I think there is something to it, but I would say this, that there is always, and here I'll just use business terms, not churchly terms, if you'll forgive it, but there is a market for the small college that is distinct and different from that of the large university, the Walmart. Large universities certainly offer some things that smaller schools cannot, but there are also things that we offer that a large university may not. I think that there is an increasing awareness that there's a value to education that goes beyond simply getting a piece of paper. One of the emphases of our, within our Lutheran tradition of Lutheran higher education, is that we are interested not just in educating and forming the mind, but also the person, in giving the person a sense of values, of ethics, and most importantly, at least for our LCMS universities today, is to give to them the gospel of Jesus Christ, because that's what will make the difference in their lives 40 years after they graduate. But I do think that there is a future for the smaller Christian faith-based higher learning institution. And what that future exactly looks like, I've never been very good at predicting the future. God has not made me a prophet. I'm not a prophet or the son of a prophet, but I do have absolute confidence that the mission of our Concordias is going to be viable and functioning not only 10 years down the road, but 100 years down the road, unless Christ returns first.
How do we bring down the cost of higher education?
That is a really difficult question. All of our concordias are still basically tuition-driven. That means that a lot of our funding comes from tuition. There was a day when the concordias were almost entirely funded by the Synod itself. And I know that there is an issue about endowments. Let me give you kind of an example. A generation ago, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod said to concordias like ours, we really don't want you to have an endowment. We don't want you to become independent from us, but don't worry, we will take care of your needs. And they did for many, many decades. They have not for a long time. Today, we get absolutely nothing directly from the Synod to support our operating budget. What that means is two things. One is we are way behind on endowments compared to other institutions. So we're working very hard to build those. Endowments are one of those sources of revenue that is not tuition, which allows us to operate without charging higher tuition. We don't have that yet. We're working on it. There are other revenue sources that have to be developed so that we can, as a university, function. There's a set cost to running a university, especially a bricks-and-mortar school like ours or the other Concordias. There's just the expenses of upkeep of a campus. There's biggest expenses, of course, are things like faculty and staff. You have to have the proper faculty levels and the proper staff levels in order to serve the students properly. So I would say that keeping the cost of higher education down is a challenge for all of us. One thing that can happen and needs to happen is for people who love Christian higher education, whether they themselves are a product of it or if they see the absolute value of it into the future for the church and the world, that they include us in their giving so that we're able to use those funds to offset the actual cost of education and keep the tuition as low as we can for our students to make Lutheran College degree affordable.
In your experience, are many Lutheran parents naive about what is being taught on secular college campuses?
I think they are, to be honest with you. I've not done any kind of a survey or read anything, which is actually interviewed people, for example, or gathered hard data on that question. But I'm pretty sure that most Christians are unaware of the nature of secular higher education. It's been kind of interesting because even though we are not the highest paying university in Chicago, in fact, we're not anywhere close to that, we continue to attract incredibly gifted faculty. And often they come from other schools where perhaps we were making even more money. But when they come to Concordia, they know that they are in a faith-based institution, and that's where they want to be, because they want to do something like if a student's in trouble, to have the freedom to pray with the student. They want to be able to tie faith in Jesus Christ to whatever they're teaching. And those are very important values for faculty. Those things do not exist on secular campuses. They can't. It's as if Jesus has been banned. You can have as in so much of our culture today, a generic God with a small g, but you can't define who that is. And certainly, above all, you cannot define who that God is in the person of Jesus Christ. And that is a definition of our secular world. Secular higher education essentially is a reflection of that. That's not to say that there are not devout Christians serving on faculties and staffs or being in the student body of such universities. There are. And I thank God for that, and I thank God for our university ministries that the Synod has on major secular university campuses in order to proclaim Christ to students who are not going to hear about him in class or on the campus itself.
Are you concerned about the future of religious higher education and public funding?
That, too, is an interesting question. One of the things I've heard many, many times over the last few years is, why can't you be just like Hillsdale College? The reason Hillsdale College is raised is because they have no student loans that are funded by the government. They have absolutely no government funds. And the question often is, well, why don't you do that? Well, it's because we do not have a $2 billion endowment that allows us to do that. We are, I think, if always going to be subject to the constraints of different government loan programs and government grants for some of our students. We have many students at Concordia who come from across ethnic and other backgrounds, but who are in Illinois are called MAP grant students, Monetary Assistance Program, which is a state of Illinois funded program for lower income families that provides a cash grant to students to assist them in paying tuition. That too is very important to some of our students. And unfortunately, I don't think any private college, at least within our Concordia system, has the ability financially to make up that difference. But with any kind of government funding comes the unfortunate reality is you have to deal with those government agencies. And that, in turn, is a snowball effect because it means you have to have all sorts of staff people to fill out the paperwork for the government agency so that you can get the money, your students can get the money from the government. We do not receive any direct funding from the government, the university itself. Our students can, through either state of Illinois grants, or federal student loans.
Does that concern you, if especially in terms of kind of the religious freedom question that looms for all of us, whether or not any Christian university that wants to maintain a biblical view of, say, gender, human sexuality, and fight against the errors that are out there rampant, running rampant on the average secular university campus, trying to do that, that they might jeopardize the state and federal money that their students have access to by way of grants and loans?
Oh, it absolutely does. There was, 2 years ago, what was called the Dear Colleague letter that came from the Department, the U.S. Department of Education. It does not have the force of law in that it was not enacted by Congress. What it was these Dear Colleague letters, what they are, it's essentially a bureaucratic missive that says this is the policy you must follow. And it did not exempt religious institutions, and it dealt specifically, the one I was most concerned about, in fact, we were all very concerned about, with issues of gender. Now, the response of our university was, whatever happens, we will not comply. We cannot. We cannot violate the Word of God, and we will not do it. Fortunately, it was never enforced, and with the election of a new president and the appointment of new bureaucrats at the Department of Education, that old Dear Colleague letter was rescinded. It no longer is there. However, politics change. Just as they changed a year ago, they will change again in the future. And so it's possible that that particular thing can come back to haunt us yet again in the future. California has had real struggles with this, and it has put our sister university, Concordia University, Irvine, California, into a particularly difficult position. Right now, they're kind of this neutral ground, but there's some concern that the legislature of the state of California is going to come back with some further restrictions that might, in fact, directly impact schools like Concordia. So, yes, it is a concern. I think for right now, we have a breathing spell because the pressure is not there from the federal government in the same way that it was 2 years ago. Again, that can, and in my view, probably will change with the future election.
Dr. Dan Gard is our guest. We're talking about the closing of small religious colleges and universities. When we come back, how difficult is the challenge of remaining faithfully Lutheran in the higher education context?
What is the state of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in 2017? Take an in-depth look at trends, data, and stories from around the LCMS when you read the Lutheran Witness magazine's annual State of the Synod issue this November. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness to get 6 issues for only $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/trylutheranwitness.
Are you thankful for the worldwide outreach of issues, etc.? Please consider making a special Thanksgiving gift. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. With 6 weeks left in 2017, we're approximately $97,000 short of expenses. Thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year.
He's the most Lutheran man in the world.
I'm not always in Pensacola, Florida, but when I am, I attend Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
Congregation of Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Pensacola, Florida invites you to join us for divine services on Sundays at 8 or 10:30, Sunday school and Bible class at 9:15. Whether you're in Pensacola to enjoy the white sandy beaches of the Emerald Coast or for military training, we invite you to join us. Jesus is here. Word, water, bread and wine for you.
Emmanuel, God with us.
Stay Lutheran, my friends.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armed forces, the LCMS ministry to the armed forces, lcms.org/armed forces. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday afternoon, we're talking about the closing of small religious colleges and universities. Dr. Dan Gard, president of Concordia University of Chicago, is our guest. Dr. Gard, how difficult is the challenge to remain faithfully Lutheran in the higher education context?
It is always a challenge, and especially today. There's a couple of things that play into that. One is the decreasing demographics of our own synod. That is the number of high school kids that are available or looking at college at all among LCMS parishes. And the fact that we do have 10 very good schools, all of which want LCMS students as well as others, but that pool of LCMS students shrinks. Overall, high school demographics are down to their lowest level since World War II. That's impacting higher education across the country. So having a higher percentage of LCMS youth on campus or students on campus is always going to be a challenge. Additionally, identifying first and then recruiting LCMS professors is also a huge challenge. Many professors are able to obtain higher salaries outside the system. And so some will be teaching outside the system where they can be a great influence in whatever university or college they teach at. And those who are interested in teaching in Lutheran colleges have essentially every Concordia going after them. Having Lutheran professors is a big part of identifying yourself as Lutheran. We do throughout our curriculum and throughout the university, we are not the least bit ashamed of who we are. When students come on campus to visit, or when they begin school, what they hear from me every single time is that we are an institution of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I know that not all of you are, but let me tell you what that means. It means, first of all, that we believe that God created you, that you are uniquely one of a kind, a creation of God. There's no one like you. But we also believe that God loved you so much that he gave his only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, for your sins, that you could have life eternal. Now, if God loves you that much, and he does, we too want to love you that much. And so we're here to walk with you, not just in education, but in who you are, both as a person and as one whom God created and loved in his Son. So we try to breathe that in everything we do.
Finally then, Dr. Gard, make the case for us that confessional Lutheran colleges and universities are still needed in the 21st century.
I would not only make the case that they're needed, I would say they are needed more than ever. Our university was founded essentially as a school for immigrants. 1864 is the official date, even though it goes back a few years earlier into Indiana before it moved here. And it was founded to form and educate Lutheran teachers. They were all German-speaking men. But as the immigrants came into this part of the country, the first thing the German Lutherans would do, I think even before they put up a church building, is they'd build a school because they wanted to educate their children. So we had a very specific mission at that point, and it was education grounded in the gospel of Jesus Christ. There was a mission field. That mission field were those German Lutheran immigrants that at that time were pouring into the country. They're not pouring into the country anymore, German Lutheran immigrants. But they are coming from other places, and we are positioned to be the church's mission outreach to them. So we have the mission of serving the church always first in forming and training church workers of different kinds. For example, here at Concordia Chicago, we have the Synod's only deaconess program for undergraduates. Only here can a young woman come and be prepared during her undergraduate years to be commissioned and consecrated as a deaconess at the conclusion of her undergraduate program. She does not have to. She can if she wants to, but does not have to go on to one of the seminaries. So that's unique to us, but also pre-seminary, these other church vocations. But along with that is forming students for vocation in the world. We have some 60 majors, undergraduate. We also have a huge graduate school. But the undergraduate majors provide Concordia-formed workers in a wide variety of vocations. If I can give you just one example that kind of surprised me about what a difference Concordia makes. A young man who graduated last year, it's one of those things where he's my daughter's boyfriend, but he's asked permission to marry her, but has not given her a ring yet, so I'm not sure if I can call him fiancé yet. Whatever that is. He graduated with a degree in computer science. When he was a student, he had an internship nearby. He went into that internship and was really excited about it. But at one point, the business owner required him to do something that he knew was immoral. It was wrong. It was unethical. And he knew that because he'd been at Concordia. He wasn't just an expert in computers. He understood who he is as a Christian and what it means to live a life of a vocation that serves the Lord who created and redeemed him. And so he told the business owner, he said, "I'm sorry, I can't do that." And the business owner said, "Well, then I guess your internship is over." And he said, "Well, I guess it is over." He terminated his internship based upon an ethical stance that he had learned here and eventually graduated. He was immediately, even before he graduated, hired by the very company he had always wanted to work for, doing exactly what he wants to do as a computer engineer, and frankly, has a hugely successful career ahead of him. But what impressed me about that was we have a mission, and yes, it is to form church workers, but those who are not church workers, to form them as Christ servants in whatever vocation they go into, and to actually make a difference. Technology, computers, as this young man his life is dedicated to, can be used for great evil, or they can be used for good to further the benefit of human beings. What we do at the Concordia is we prepare men and women to serve the world, but not just serve the world, but in serving the world, to serve the Christ who has loved them and redeemed them.
Dr. Dan Gard is president of Concordia University Chicago. You can find out more about Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu. That's cuchicago.edu or call 708-771-8300. Concordia University Chicago. Dr. Gard, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Terry Mattingly is our guest on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about Newsmax magazine's 100 most influential evangelicals in America. Not a lot of surprises, a few omissions, and some people included that don't qualify as evangelicals usually. We'll talk with Terry Mattingly about it after this.
Orphan Grain Train is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During November, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Orphan Grain Train. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Answering objections defending the faith, evolution or creation, transgenderism and homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 3rd at Faith Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas. Learn more at worldviewsa.org. This conference features issues that center a guest, Dr. Jan Lohmeyer, and Pastor David J. Weber. The San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 3rd, worldviewsa.org.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.